fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men who jump and die. Men who mean just what they say. The brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand. Men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Back at home, a young wife waits. Her Green Beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day. Have him win the Green Beret.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is J.R. Moore coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks. On Friday, the 30th day of August, year of our Lord, 2019, welcome to the John Moore Show. We begin our shows with a Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Prepper tip of the day. I want to encourage all of you to spend time with your team, work together, play together, pray together. All those activities have different components to them, different aspects of people's personalities. It's really important to know all aspects of the personalities of your team members. Very important. We have a patient waiting in the green room, my friend Tom Berryhill. Tom is a gentleman who began a quest more than half a century ago to understand, comprehend, eventually become quite expert in anything and everything related to radio frequency engineering, ham radio communications, electronics in general. We're going to talk about emergency survival communications. Good morning, Tom.
Hi, John. Good morning. How are you doing today?
Well, really good. Had some internet issues. It was probably a temporary loss of power, but I had to disconnect and reconnect everything to get the internet working properly again. That was only 15 minutes before the show began, so it was kind of a frenzied rush there to get everything fixed and squared away, but we got it done. That's the only thing that matters. How about yourself, sir?
Oh, pretty good, John. It sounds like you were dealing with emergency communications there at the last minute.
Well, it was a quasi-emergency, not that life and limb were at risk, but it's far better to do the show on Skype than it is on the telephone. Well, Tom...
Sounds good.
Yes, sir. The bizarre, freakish weather events continue. I heard a report yesterday of some location that had, I think it was 5 feet of hail, if you can imagine such a thing. It's hard to comprehend hail 5 feet deep. But these bizarre weather events will, and already have, impact regular communications, cellular telephones, landline telephones, the things that we depend on for everyday use. And when those things go out, if you don't have ham radio, you're pretty much stuck, aren't you?
That's really true. That can easily happen. And you know, John, these regular communication systems, being cellular, perhaps law enforcement, fire, all types of land mobile equipment that's used for in your local area, for the infrastructure, the roads, bridges, the utility workers, those systems can easily be impacted by hail like that. If a large hailstone hits one of those antennas on those systems, it can easily damage it beyond repair, and they're off the air. If those antennas are bent or hit by heavy hail like that, it can easily render them total garbage, useless. So the thing with ham radio is that the ham operators are pretty skilled in building their own antennas, even from emergency. In an emergency, they can use just junk equipment and pieces of wire and things that are laying around. The ham operators are required to know some of that to even get the license, how to cut the wire and to the proper length and make those antennas from scratch. It's not hard to do. And then as far, you know, John, I focus on HF communications, which is shortwave region for the radio spectrum. That's from 2 to 30 megahertz. And those frequency ranges, just very thin wires will work fine. Wires that are small enough and limber enough where a hailstone could hit it and just maybe move it sideways or bounce off of it and not really even harm it. So those antennas would still be usable or easily repaired or put back up, and you'd be back on the air to provide communications for your area in the event of an outage like that. But heavy icing and hail, things like that, do really mess up these antenna systems. And the cell antennas are very large. I don't know if you've ever looked up in some of those cell towers, but some of those antenna arrays are quite large, and it could easily be damaged by hail.
Absolutely. Well, I recall in east central Missouri, the winter of 73-74, we had an ice storm. Boy, oh boy, did we have an ice storm. I remember driving down Interstate 55, and it looked like some kind of science fiction movie of what an ice storm could look like. Knocked out power for more than a week in much of the area, due largely to, at the time, the power companies, utility companies, were not trimming the trees hanging near and above the power lines. The consequences of that storm instituted the power lines, the power companies, utility companies, hiring outside vendors to maintain those right-of-ways and keep their limbs off from damaging the power lines. So that's been, 45 years ago. And those protocols and those outside vendors continue to keep the power lines pretty clear most of the time. But that was a wake-up call, and sometimes that's what it takes, is a massive disaster for people to wake up and mitigate against the same thing happening in the future, doesn't it, Tom?
Well, that's usually what it takes, and unfortunately there's a lot of destruction and misery that comes with it to provide that wake-up call. But I kind of remember that storm, John, and then, of course, the snowstorm that came in, and was it end of January, early part of February of 82, I believe it was.
Right.
That was,
right.
That shut down the entire St. Louis region, and it was, I remember people going up and down.
You're going up and down what?
Well, people were pulling sleds down South right. Limburg Boulevard there in the South St. Louis County
right.
area. There was no traffic, and they were using sleds to take the kids to the store and haul their groceries back.
Right.
It was amazing. What I remember the most about that is how you could hear for such a great distance. If a car was coming down the road, you could hear it a half a mile away. It was so quiet.
Right. Well, there's and when you live in a country, you become much more aware of the ambient noise level in urban suburban areas that you get so used to it when you live in an urban suburban area, you don't even recognize there is an ambient noise level. That snowstorm I remember well. My automobile parked in a driveway, which at the time was a Saab Sonnet, a little two-door fiberglass sports car. The snow was even, literally, even with the top of the car. Now, if you're up in Minnesota, you may think, what's the big deal? But this far south, that's pretty extraordinary. We got some notices here, Tom, that for people, if they're interested in learning more about ham radio, there's three conventions coming up in the next 4 weeks. ARRL Conventions, Amateur Radio Relay League, and it's at their website, the ARRL, that's Alpha Romeo Romeo Lima .org website, and it's linked to my links page. The first one is the New England Division Convention in Boxborough, Massachusetts. That's September 6th, 7th, and 8th. The next one's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the Central Division Convention. That's September 27th and 28th. And then the Wells Fargo, North Dakota, Dakota Division Convention, only one day, September 28th. These are places where if you happen to go to one of them, you'll meet dozens of men and women who are participating in the ham radio hobby. You'll be vendors there selling high-quality equipment, probably vendors selling used high-quality used equipment at good prices. And you can meet people, get access to the material you need to get started in the ham radio community. And that's what we do every week, Tom, is encourage people to become part of the ham radio community, don't we, sir?
Yeah, that's right, John. And I'd like to also add, the weekend of September 21st, there's a pretty nice ham fest in Peoria, Illinois. I'm thinking about going to that myself. It's pretty good size. It wasn't in earlier years. I don't know if it's still as big of an event as it used to be, but still it's pretty well attended. And if you're interested in anything like this, they have a huge flea market area where there's all types of trading, buying, selling, and just yakking about ham radio. And you'll see a lot of people that know quite a bit about it and a lot of equipment that would be available that might pique your interest. And you can ask questions and learn about it. I'm sure they will have testing sessions. Volunteer examiners will be there for testing. I've seen very few ham fests where they don't do some sort of test session. So if you want to take your test, you could check with those with the club that sponsors that ham fest. I'm sure there's information online about it. But
well, there
it's a good
is.
One to go to.
Ham fest is 2 days, September 21st and 22nd. It's at the Exposition Gardens in Peoria, Illinois. The address is 1601 West Northmore, one word, West Northmore Road. The website is whiskey9uniformvictorindia.org. That's whiskey9uniformvictorindia.org. It's sponsored by the Peoria Area Amateur Radio Club. Let's see, if you don't have internet access, you can give them a call at, call Deb, and her telephone number is 309-453-9331. I say again, call Deb, D-E-B, 309-453-9331. So it's 2 days, September 21st and 22nd. If you want to get the good bargains, you want to get there the first day, don't need time.
Oh, absolutely. And you want to be there when the sun's coming up and the good deals will be out there. But if somebody's just getting started and interested in learning more about it and getting in on conversations, there'll always be some hams hanging around a table at the flea market talking about the technology and getting started and antennas and radios. You can ask questions. These guys and these gals will be more than happy to help you. And it's just a good way to see what it's all about, see what the equipment is like, what it looks like, how much does it cost. There'll be vendors there selling brand new equipment as well as items out in the flea market area that are used, as well as all types of connectors, wire, solder, tools, everything you can think of. that would help you with electronics in general as well as ham radio.
And it's no longer a requirement that your ham radio shack be aligned with Knotty Pine and that you smoke Prince Albert pipe tobacco. You no longer have to do that, do you, Tom?
No, you don't, John, but I'll tell you something I'm kicking around because I found a deal on a broadcast transmitter. I'm really thinking about putting in a 1 kilowatt AM radio station transmitter. I'm talking to a guy that's got one for sale, and it would fit right in with that scene, you know, the Knotty Pine and the pipe tobacco. But this thing is 78 inches tall, about 30 inches wide, and about 30 inches deep. It's the size of the old style telephone booth where you went in and closed the door so you could talk on the phone privately. That's how big right. This thing is. So that would, and it's got windows on there so you can see the gigantic tubes glowing in the dark. And it's AM. And I'm really thinking about doing that and putting that thing on the 160 meter band and then somehow, some way, putting up a quarter wave vertical antenna for that. That'd be 130 feet tall. And it's something I've always wanted to do, and I certainly have the space to do it out here in the country. It's just moving that thing and going to Tennessee to get it, and 1,000 pounds that thing weighs.
Okay, so it weighs 1,000 pounds, and it's all. It would be very EMP resistant, being the vintage it is. So once this is set up, you got 1,000 watts, and you're on the 160. Megahertz or kilo? What is it? Kilohertz?
160 meter band. That's 1.8 to 2.0 megahertz. This transmitter is made by Gates Corporation in Quincy, Illinois. A lot of broadcast equipment was made in Quincy, Illinois. And probably, I don't know this for a fact, but probably because of early day ham radio operators that were interested in broadcasting probably started making transmitters, and one thing led to another, and it just turned into an industry that had its birthplace in Quincy, Illinois. But that's where the transmitter was made, and it's from the mid-60s, 1960s, excellent condition. But that, that would be definitely EMP-proof, but it was made to tune from 500 kilohertz approximately all the way up to 1.6. It'll go higher than that. I saw some specs that said it would go to 2 megahertz. So without any modifications, it will tune the entire AM broadcast band all the way up into all the way to the end of the 160 meter ham band. That ham band is right above the broadcast band, and it has propagation over the ground wave and sky wave, and all. It's pretty much the same as how an AM radio station would work. So it's
once it's set up, what would you do with it? You broadcast to whom, for what reason?
Well, I would use it as a ham radio transmitter. You push the button to talk and let back on the button, let it go to listen. There's a few modifications you have to do to use it for that, but a lot of hams are still interested in the AM, the old-time AM broadcasting type of equipment, and they actually modify these transmitters from AM radio stations that have gone off the air. They'll get their hands on these things and retrofit them to work in the ham bands. It's not that hard to do. You have to change the coils and the capacitors in the RF amplifier stage so that they'll resonate in the ham radio band. And most of the time they'll put these on 160 meter band, which is 1.8 to 2 megahertz, or they'll put them on the 75 meter band, it's 80 and 75. The phone part of the band is called 75 meters, and that's around 3.8 to 4 megahertz. But that's where it would end up. I'd put it on.
We got a break. We got a caller on hold. We'll be right back.
Republic Broadcasting Network depends on listener support of our advertisers and of our sponsors. We'd like to especially thank all of you who have taken advantage of our fundraiser with FrontSight Bonus. Those who are now FrontSight members, please train as soon as possible for your sake and for that of our nation. And please consider sharing your training and what you've learned when you arrive home. Republic Broadcasting Network has to stop promoting this fundraiser on air and on the website in just a few days. Dr. Ignatius Piazza, president of FrontSight, made a gracious exception to his no media rule for us at Republic Broadcasting Network. Thank you, Dr. Piazza. And once you've been to FrontSight, feel free to call your favorite host and share your experience on the air. We can continue this fundraiser without media help, but it'll be totally up to the listeners to spread the information. Please call Dan Sutterfield in Missouri at 573-465-2356, 573-465-2356. That's 573-465-2356.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Kosher-tified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Jared Moore here on Friday, the 30th of August. We're going on a cruise. It will be fun. If you choose it to be, it could be romantic. It will be informative. All those things. We're leaving Port Canaveral Saturday the 9th day of February, returning a week later on the 16th. Valentine's Day is right in the middle of the cruise. It'll be a lot of fun. And, of course, I'll be there. Leon Green will be there. We're hoping that one or two of our other hosts, guest hosts, will be here. And, yeah, all the details are there at my website. You can sign up right now. You can call our cruise director for more information. She'll be glad to mail you a full-color brochure. Our cruise director is Betsy Murphy. I'll give you her telephone number twice, slowly, 636-530-9502. I say again, 636-530-9502. Visiting with Tom Berryhill, we're talking about the emergency survival communications. And Tom, we got a caller on hold here. John in Tennessee. Good morning, John.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Tom, two questions. Three men that I work with and myself are really considering getting into ham radio. So my question for you is, what do you do about, how do you study for it? Where do you go? Where's the information?
Okay, John, here's what... Yeah, go ahead, John.
Everything's at the ARRL.website. Everything you need. You'll find your local ham radio club. You'll have access to study material. Everything you need right there at ARRL.org. John, anything else?
Yeah, one other thing. Tom, you mentioned a 1,000-watt radio in Tennessee. Please tell me that it's not in Middle Tennessee.
It's where? What town? What did you say?
It's not in Middle Tennessee, is it?
No. This is near... Well, there's several of these units. They're for sale all the time, John. And this particular one is near Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay, well, that's a good thing. I'm glad it's not near my area because there is one 2 or 3 miles from the house, and I was hoping he wasn't selling it. So, anyway,
oh,
I appreciate it.
Is it a radio station?
It's an AM radio station, but from what I understand, you said they can be modified to work as a ham, right?
Yeah, they all of these transmitters can easily be put on the shortwave spectrum. The reason the big broadcast transmitters are so attractive to use is because they're built for continuous duty. They're built to output that type of power level 24/7. So the power supply components, the transformers, the all the wiring, everything, all the components are built in a very rugged way to withstand those types of conditions. So you can modify the coils, the capacitors that are in what's called the tank circuit or the output circuit where it feeds the antenna, and all of that can be easily modified. Well, I say easily. If you have the tools and the equipment, it can be easily modified to operate all throughout the shortwave spectrum. There's a few things you have to pay attention to, but the basis of any shortwave transmitter is right there in that cabinet that used to be an AM radio station. So you can modify it and use it for Morse code or CW operation. You could also use it for AM, and you could would not do single sideband. There's ways to do that, but you could use it as an amplifier for a lower power single sideband transmitter, but there's better ways to do that. So it's mainly for the nostalgia of AM broadcasting is where a lot of these things are put back into service, and most of them end up on 160-meter and 75-meter ham radio bands. And these guys put them on the air, and they use... Go ahead, John.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. What are you... If someone were to consider something like that, what are they looking at as far as investment financially to do that?
Well, to buy a transmitter, those things can be, I've seen them where they pay you to get it out of there. You have to get it out of the radio station, and they'll pay you to get it, all the way to a couple of $1,000. I've never seen one for more than $2,000. The one I'm looking at is around $700. And then you have to put up the antenna. Now, if you want to have a vertical antenna on there to radiate, that signal at 160 meters, that's about 130 feet tall if you want a full-size vertical antenna. Now, you can use a shorter antenna, which I might do, and then you have to have a special, what they call a matching network right there at the base of the antenna. You have a large inductor, which is a coil, and a capacitor to tune it. It's almost like an antenna tuner, but you want to do that right at the base of the antenna. That's the best way to do it. And then you have to be very careful, John, because even with a low-powered transmitter, when you start using antenna tuners like this at the base of the antenna to adjust a short antenna to that transmitter, you can have several thousand volts of RF energy there. It can really burn you. It'll burn you.
Dangerous stuff.
You.
Dangerous stuff.
Very dangerous.
John, thank you for the call. We got a bomb.
Okay, operation. Well, thank you.
We'll be right back. Stay tuned, everybody.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356, or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
All right, we're back. This is Tim J.R. Moore here on Friday. It is Friday, the last day of August. My website is thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com. Lots of discussion, lots of concern about the economy. If you're concerned about the economy, well, there's a red box with a gold ribbon on it. It looks like a Christmas package at my website at thelibertyman.com. Click on that, and you'll be at the landing site for Steve Hunt's landing site for Swiss America. This is the real deal. Steve is our economic advisor, the John Moore Radio Show economic advisor, and he'll give you the straight skinny on gold and silver, educate you, and find out what your goals are and help you meet your goals. Also on our website, of course, our energy clinics, we have the Labor Day sale going. Labor Day sale goes until midnight Monday. And if you want to participate, well, you have until midnight Monday to mail your check or money order. Have it postmarked by midnight Monday. $25 off energy cleaners, 10% off mattress pads, and that's it. That's the sale. And if you want to participate, this is your opportunity to do so. Oh, you can, that's right. You can call my toll-free hour line 24 hours a day. Here it is, 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. When you place your order, the automated system charges full price. I manually make the sale price refund. So that's how that's done. We're visiting with Tom Berryhill. We're talking about emergency survival communications. And Tom, while I'm thinking about it, I'm going to need more energy cleaners, sir. ASAP.
Yeah, John, they're in progress right now. So
in progress, in the works. Okay.
In the works. We're constantly producing those units.
All right.
For nearly 20 years now.
Well, might make a career of it, huh?
I'm thinking about it. You know, John, and on that subject, I know there's a lot of homeschoolers that listen to your broadcasts, and people should keep this in mind. If there's any young person in your family, if you have children that are interested in learning how to do things, get them involved in ham radio. I started at a very young age, and I've never taken a course in electronics. I never have, John. It's all been hands-on. I learned by reading books and experimenting, and I ended up making a career out of it, and I've worked on some very sophisticated communication systems, biomedical equipment. It's far-reaching what you can do if you learn the basics by experimenting with ham radio. It will be a training ground for many different disciplines in the electronics industry. So you could get a young person started. I'm a perfect example of that because that's the only training I ever had. And from that, I have built commercial radio stations from the ground up, FM stations. And it allows you to have the skills to do that. You can learn that as you go, learn about electronics in general. You can take it to any extreme that you want to, or just be very casual and talk on the radio to other people, and learn as you go. You go as far as you want, or just do it as a casual type of hobby. So that's why I encourage anybody with young people in their family to get them involved. I think they would find it to be a very beneficial thing for those young people. I guess you're not there, John. Maybe your phone cut out. I don't know. I'll just keep talking. But anyway, back to the broadcast transmitter that I'm working on here in Missouri. Something to also take into consideration is that transmitter, while it's on 160-meter band, it used to be an AM radio station. That transmitter could easily be put back into service on the AM band in the event of an all-out catastrophe where there was no communications available and you needed to get information out over a wide regional area. That transmitter on an emergency basis could easily be put back on any frequency in the AM broadcast band to serve a community or an entire region with emergency broadcasts. You could leave it on the air. It could be powered from a generator. So that transmitter could be very useful in trying times, and that's something that I did keep in the back of my mind in the event something like that happened, that would be a broadcast station. It could be put to use for emergency purposes. Back with us yet, John? I guess not. Maybe there's some equipment failures there. Anyway, That's what I'll be doing with the transmitters, experimenting on the 160-meter band. And then I do use, of course, the HF communications is my favorite mode of ham radio. And that's the 2 megahertz, or the 1.8 megahertz is the lower end. That's the 160-meter band up through 30 megahertz, or 29.7. That's the top end of the 10-meter band. And most of the work that I do is on Morse code on the 40-meter band, in the lower part of the 40-meter band, 7.0 to 7.3 megahertz. And that's where you would, the 40-meter band would be extremely useful day and night for regional and wider range communications in the event of an emergency. There are established networks that operate on a daily basis on that ham radio band that you could participate in. You can check in. A lot of mobile units are installed in cars, trucks, RVs, over-the-road rigs. They'll have their HF radio equipment in there, and they check in on a regular basis on these networks to to get information out, just general discussion. But it's a casual thing until there's an emergency. Now, with some of these storms coming in the southeast part of the country, Florida and the Caribbean, they will be using ham radio, I guarantee it, to relay a lot of information from those areas. If there's any major outages, the ham operators will step up and provide communications. A lot of it will be by digital, and there's a tremendous interest in that nowadays. Everybody likes texting with their phones, but on the ham radio equipment, you can attach computers, laptops, even tablet-type computers are used somewhat on the digital modes, where they interface the computer equipment with the ham radio equipment, and you can transmit your text and email-type messages worldwide. And that everybody should keep in mind that this is without any type of cellular telephone infrastructure. It's not a cell tower you have to worry about. It's your antenna system to the distant station you're communicating with to their antenna system. So you transmit over these wide areas and everything in between without having any type of infrastructure other than what you provide yourself. So that's why it's so handy to have this type of equipment in major outages, any type of emergency situation. You'd be able to have nearly instant communications worldwide, and especially on a regional basis. Since so many emergencies are regional in nature, you'd be able to supply really needed communications in those areas. And then, of course, there's a VHF. That's the 2-meter ham radio bands. That's 144 to 148 megahertz. If you have scanners, you can easily hear the ham operators talking in those ranges. There is digital communications there as well. A lot of it, though, is by voice modes of communications on FM. And there's repeater systems where they take the weak mobile signal and repeat that with a station that's usually on a very tall tower or a tall building or on top of a mountain. They'll pick up that weak signal and rebroadcast it on another channel with a very high power level so that the communications is extended over a very wide area. So those systems are very handy to have and are very useful if you're traveling, because the antennas can be quite small on a vehicle. You might have an antenna that's only on 2 meters, for example. That antenna would be about 19 inches long. It can just be a very thin whip antenna made out of stainless steel wire, nothing unsightly, very almost invisible sometimes. You see them on police cars, just a small wire antenna that's a foot and a half long or so. That works quite well with those systems and can give you very wide coverage. You can also talk car to car over many miles if you have a high enough power unit in the car. So 2 meters is very handy for emergency communications in your general area, your regional area, and local communications. But for the wide area, which is what I focus on, that would be HF systems. It's important to have all of that equipment available if you're serious about emergency communication. Sounds like you might be back, John.
Oh, well, I'm back. During Hurricane Katrina, just afterwards, I was bidding on a contract to protect a hospital down there with my security team and HF communications. We were going to have a base station up here in Viburnum, Missouri, a warehouse and an airstrip and an aircraft to bring down supplies, and of course a compatible HF station down at the hospital to be able to communicate back and forth, because we couldn't count on anything working other than what we had proprietary. And we didn't get the contract, but that's what we were going to do, was use HF to communicate with my security team and our base station up here in Missouri. That's the way to do it. HF was the best way to communicate 80 years ago, and it's still the best way to communicate, isn't it?
Well, it really is, John, and I've mentioned this before, that in St. Louis County, going north on Highway 141, right at Interstate 64, I still call it Highway 40, but they call it 64 now, there's a Missouri Department of Transportation building there, and they have an HF dipole antenna on the roof. I just see these antennas driving around. I just zero in on stuff like that because I know what it's for and what they're doing with it. But they have an emergency system there. Now, most of these state agencies are set up with this type of equipment. They don't use it on a regular basis. There's no need to because they have some very wide area coverage with their VHF systems that they normally use, the two-way radios in the trucks and vehicles that they use on a daily basis. But in an all-out emergency, they would those systems were shut down because some of them are interconnected and could maybe lose part of that infrastructure. They would go to the HF system, which would give them statewide and actually multiple states. They'd be able to talk to multiple states from any of those systems throughout the state they're located in. So that's what they would revert to in the event everything else was out. So I'm finding those types of systems are installed all over the place. I was going by a hospital the other day, and I noticed HF antenna systems on top of a hospital. So perhaps they're using them in hospitals as well. I don't know. And I tend to not want to ask because I have a feeling that if you go in and start asking about their communications infrastructure, you would be viewed as some sort of terrorist or something
Unless you had a personal connection before you walked in the door. Right. We got a caller on hold here. We got Jerry.
Good morning, Tom. John. I called in for a specific question, but I'm going to address the HF and systems and what have you that you're seeing on these hospitals. There's a ham operator here in my area. He is a member of MERS and ARIES, I think it is, and they've got set up where they, if the internet goes down, they can transfer information, medical records and what have you, via VHF, UHF, and HF to get around cell phones or internet and this sort of thing. So it's actually a ham radio network that they're developing. You may know more about that, John or Tom, than I do. But I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing a bunch of that.
Well, that could be, Jerry. Now, did you mention MARS, M-A-R-S?
MARS or MERS? I don't know.
Mars.
Yeah, something like that. MERS.
MARS. Mars.
Yeah. MARS is the Military Affiliate Radio System, M-A-R-S, and that is usually ham operators that operate, and those are not ham radio systems, by the way. They're military affiliated, and they operate right outside the ham radio bands. You'll hear them usually on the lower frequencies, but they'll be right above the 75-meter band and around 4.0 to 4.1 megahertz in that range. I don't know the exact frequencies they use. And then they have other frequencies. I hear them quite often right above the 75-meter band. And they would be allowed to do that in an emergency. I'm sure the hands could do that, too. I don't know about the medical records, with the HIPAA stuff and all that. I don't know how involved they would get. But it would be quite easy to transmit encrypted data on the MARS frequencies to help out these hospitals in an emergency like that. That's actually a very good approach to getting that job done.
There's two ham operators in Burnett, Texas, and what have you, that are real active. They have weekly check-ins for all of the state of Texas and maybe some of the surrounding states. It's a pretty entailed infrastructure that they've got going down here. And they start to gear up because of the hurricane season and whatever. But I find that kind of interesting that they fall back on us amateurs to bail them out, hey? But anyway, what do you know about HAARP, Tom?
Well, I know a little bit about it. I remember when it first went on the air, they asked the ham operators to tune in on the HF frequencies that they were using. One of them, I believe, was right below 7 megahertz, the 40-meter band. I actually heard it. I was not too impressed. It didn't sound very loud to me. I don't remember exactly what I heard, but then I've also heard that the thing's been disabled and it's taken off the air.
No,
I don't think they even use it anymore.
No, HAARP is not used anymore. We got another
call. I'll pursue that subject later. Y'all have a good weekend. Thanks for taking
my
call.
Thank you, Jerry. Our last caller this hour will be Glenn. And
good morning, John. Good morning, Tom. Hi.
You're on the air.
Can you hear me? Okay, good.
Very good, Glenn.
Very good. Yeah, you're talking about, I heard you mention Mars, military affiliate radio service. The other one you might be thinking of course, is RAFES, the Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Service, which that is ham-based. And they do, coordinate with civil authorities. It's rather than military authorities for the most part. But I'm not sure how much we see. The emphasis these days is so on getting and keeping the cell phones up. I hear during these hurricane warnings, making sure people have a way to charge their devices, which is interesting. You know, in the middle of a hurricane, the emphasis stays on the smartphones and stuff,
Well, but, they have portable cell phone sites mounted on trailers that they can set up in a matter of an hour or two.
Yeah, that's very good. I see this, I'm looking at the geography of where they're saying, this storm's going to hit. And they're calling for a landfall on Tuesday of a Cat 4 magnitude somewhere between Melbourne and Miami, which is interesting. I see the Air Force has put all their aircraft out of Homestead, way down in the southeast, and I'm listening to the civil authorities, the governor, and talking about where they're staging things from, And it just seems like they would be safe to, stage things up, in Hialeah or on the West Coast, but shoot right across 75. They could shoot right in from 75 into the area and that sort of thing. So, our home, it looks...
Go ahead, Glenn.
It looks like they could use, Hialeah on the West Coast and Homestead down in the southeast corner as staging areas to, swoop in right after the hurricane passes. But I think they're saying they're going to be bringing stuff in mostly from Orlando and from the north. Just curious. That's all I wanted to mention.
Okay, well, thank you, Glenn. So they're predicting a Category 4, Tom, for this storm to hit Florida?
I don't really know, John, but it could be pretty bad.
A Category 4, and the thing about these hurricanes is they linger, and they can stay in one spot with those high winds for 12 hours, 24 hours, doing massive damage because they linger so long. There's basically two highways that go north-south, interstate highways, one on the east and one on the west side of Florida. And we've seen this multiple times where people wait until the storm's almost there. Then they decide to get in the highway with all their neighbors, several million people at the same time. It doesn't work out too well, does it?
No, it doesn't. I was in some of that in Houston years ago, and I can't remember, 45, I think, it was out of Galveston going north through Houston and near Texas City and all that. And John, it was just gridlock. It was horrible. And people trying to get away from that hurricane. There was a hurricane coming in. There's some bad storms. It was a mess. But, yeah, you have to plan ahead for things like that. But it does turn those highways into parking lots.
It does, and it's, you know, it seems like after that's happened two or three times, people would wake up and smell the coffee. That don't do that. Don't wait until everybody's on the highway at the same time. But it just happens over and over again, doesn't it?
It really does. Nope, we don't learn from our mistakes, but that's what happens. Yeah, it does happen over and over, and it's not a good scenario. I think it's wise to have printed maps also. Everybody wants to rely on this GPS and their cell phone, but if those systems are out of commission and you don't know how to use a map, you're just going to be sitting there twiddling your thumbs. I like to have printed maps for the area that I'm going to be traveling in. That's really a good thing to have.
Well, the best map that for traveling around this country is the ones that truckers buy. They're spiral-bound, large format, 11 by 14 inches, I think, or maybe 11 by 16, and they're all laminated. So if you spill a little coffee on them, it won't just, you know, wreck the map. You're going to spend some money for them, but it's a great reference to have for the entire lower 48. And well, they may include Alaska and Hawaii also, I guess, all 50 states, and maybe parts of Canada. But those laminated, spiral-bound map atlases that the truckers get at the truck stops, that's what you want.
That's right. That's right. What do those things cost? I wouldn't mind having one of those myself.
I don't know offhand, but it looks like Glenn may be back here. Glenn, are you back?
Yeah. Hi, John. Hi, Tom. Just wanted a quick correction and a quick addendum. My map had collapsed here when I was talking to you before. And, while it's true that Naples is Hialeah, rather, is just a hair west of Miami. It's, like, right in the same complex. I meant to say Naples, Florida, for them to bring stuff in from, like, on 75. It just should be, you know, interesting about how, in view of all these evacuations and stuff, how they get stuff in after the fact. I also wanted to mention, of course, 6 meters. Plug the 50 megahertz range. Tom was talking about the AMBANDs and like six meters. It cracks me up. It was bigger back in the 60s and 70s when people didn't mind having a radio strapped under their dash and a long antenna on the back of their car. But 6 meters is I think probably a really good band for emergency communications and just the terms of it being regional and the distances involved. What does Tom think of that?
That's very true, Glenn, and I'm glad you brought that up. That's very true, and a good thing to remember is many of these new ham rigs that are HF-based 100-watt units, most of them include 6 meters, 50 to 54 megahertz, so you can operate all the
way
to the side and an FM.
We are out of time. Glenn, thank you. Tom, thank you.
Thank
we'll
you,
be
John.
Back after the break. Stay tuned.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.